Where do we find Jesus in the book of Job? I've written an article in the latest issues, etc. journal titled Job in 4 Not So Easy Steps. You can read it by subscribing to the online Issues Etc. journal. Just look for the red subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. Pastor Ross Johnson has written our Wittenberg Trail feature. It's titled Lutheranism, Christianity's Best Kept Secret, the free online Issues Etc. journal.
Extreme self-centered attitude is the source of suffering. More compassionate mind or sense of concern of others' well-being is source of happiness.
Hello world is a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy.
Are those homosexual activists bigots when they advocate that marriage not include groups, relatives, or other parties? I mean, I don't think so.
To become famous in theology means to present something new and different. But if I present something new and different, this is bound to be heresy.
If we're going to stand in God's presence, it has to be because there is a righteousness given to us from Him that clothes us.
Pro Football Hall of Fame wives, love issues, etc.
I've been watching this story unfold. Well, maybe I haven't been watching this story unfold out of Arizona. A law that seems to me to be kind of basic, reasonable, constitutional protection for conscience, for, I guess you could call it in a broader sense, religious liberty, people of a religious mindset to be able to conduct themselves and their business according to the tenets of their religion. I've watched this story, and I'm not really sure which story I've been watching, because what's come out of the press on the Arizona law to protect religious freedom is that religious liberty has become anti-gay. That seems to be the consensus in the press and among many of our political leaders. When did this happen? I mean, I must not have been paying attention. I pay pretty close attention to religious liberty. I don't consider myself anti-gay, but somehow religious liberty has become anti-gay. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live this Friday afternoon. It's the 28th of February. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Molly Hemingway joins us here for the first half hour or so. We're going to talk about media coverage of religious liberty. A little bit later, Scott Klusendorf will be our guest. We'll talk about the president of Planned Parenthood's answer to the question, when does life begin? She said, that's not relevant. And when asked about her own children, she said it began with their delivery. I wonder if she consulted her doctor during her pregnancy at all, or whether she just showed up for the beginning of her children's life at the delivery. A little bit later, Edie Wadsworth will join us to talk about the dignity of every Christian vocation, and then we'll play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week, 4 soundbites from this week's audio that we have to play for you. We'll play them. You listen, and then you call, email, send us a tweet, or go to our Facebook fan page, and you vote for Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. Our call-in number for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-MY-IE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or go to our Facebook fan page and vote in advance for Issues Etc. soundbite of the week, facebook.com/issuesetc. Facebook.com/issuesetc. Molly Hemingway is a senior editor at The Federalist, and she's author of a recent column for The Federalist titled Dumb, Uneducated, and Eager to Deceive: Media Coverage of Religious Liberty in a Nutshell. Molly, welcome back.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
When did religious liberty and the advocates for it become anti-gay?
Yeah, it's an interesting little change that has happened all of a sudden. It's staggering, actually, how quickly it happened. I guess the best way to put it would be in the last couple of years. This story out of Arizona is the best example of how we've seen the media portray religious liberty, which is something that has been fundamental to the moral case for our country for hundreds of years. It's now become something that is being portrayed as anti-gay. And it makes no sense unless all legislation can be perceived of in terms of, you know, what of gayness, you know, like a tax bill is anti-gay in that some people who pay taxes are gay, or a gun control bill is anti-gay because some people who want to buy guns are gay. It does not make sense to call a religious liberty bill anti-gay just because there are gay people in the country who might be violating people's religious freedom. And particularly on this bill, because this bill was actually not even that controversial. Almost 100% of what you saw on TV about this, almost 100% of what you read in newspapers about this bill was just completely wrong.
Molly, you start out by talking about kind of the history of religious liberty in the courts. And one of the things that you point out, and just take us through it briefly if you would, one of the things that you point out is that religious liberty and freedom of the press were at one time considered to be inseparable from one another. How is it?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting and important thing to keep in mind that a lot of the most symbolic legal victory that relates to freedom of expression and freedom of the press in American history has got to be the John Peterzinger case from 1735. And this ruling was important for many reasons, but one of the most important things is that it articulated a need for freedom of the press in terms of religious freedom. And religious freedom was something that people kind of understood as important, and they understood that if people of different religions had to get along, they had to have the freedom to convert, they had to have the freedom to articulate what they believed to be true. And Zenger was accused of libel, and his case was he was telling the truth according to his understanding of being truthful. And that this was not that it was like as relativistic as I make that sound right now. His attorney argued that this was a fundamental religious freedom, that people had to be free to work out their understanding of truth on their own without force or power or government action.
So the connection between these two is inseparable in history.
Well, and it's not just freedom of the press. I don't think people think about this. The very first freedom mentioned in the First Amendment of the Bill of Rights is freedom of religion. And then we sort of move on into press and speech and assembly. All of these things are about the fundamental nature of being human, understanding what truth is. And we kind of forget that these are religious questions. These are things that people work out according to the dictates of their conscience and according to their understanding of how truth is revealed and how truth is determined. These are religious issues, even if our modern media is completely incapable of understanding that.
You've pointed this out before, Molly, but one of the most egregious but actually subtle ways that this is communicated by the press, that religious liberty is now somehow suspect in more than one way, is the so-called scare quote. What is it? How often do you see it?
Yeah, I always find this interesting. When reporters want to send a message that they think something is debatable or untrue, they put it in what we call scare quotes. Sometimes they're called sneer quotes. They're ways of letting the reader know that the author of the piece doesn't, they're just using someone else's language that they don't actually agree with. And what's interesting about this, more than the use of these things, because there's certainly a good reason to use them at times, is how inconsistently they're used. My favorite example of this was that Religion News Service, of all places, put religious liberty in quotes because they weren't sure if people really cared about this topic, or in this case, they weren't anti-gay. They were just anti-Barack Obama. So they put religious liberty in quotes, and they said, well, we just are letting people know that not everybody agrees that this is a big issue. But they don't put things like same-sex marriage in quotes or abortion rights. Take abortion rights. Obviously, there are people. First, let's go back to religious liberty. It's pretty clear that religious liberty is settled law in at least some sense in our country. We have the First Amendment to the Constitution. We have the Religious Freedom Restoration Act of 1993. So those things are okay, right? But take an issue like abortion rights, which is based on Roe v. Wade and subsequent decisions, and some people say people have the right to take the life of an unborn child. Other people say there is no such right to take the life of an unborn child. So they don't believe that you have abortion rights. But when was the last time you saw abortion rights put in scare quotes? Or take an issue like same-sex marriage. Some people believe that is just literally an impossible term, because marriage is, by definition, the joining together of man and woman. That's what it means. That's what the entire thing is. So to say that it's something that it's not makes no sense. So the question of whether same-sex marriage is even an ontological possibility is up for, that's what the whole debate is about. But when was the last time you saw same-sex marriage scare quoted? So I just find it fascinating when we scare quote something and when we don't. There is no consistency on the issue, and it's done to disparage the side of the culture war that the media loathes.
You present, this actually came from John Swerens, but you present a framework for understanding what's going on in the media when it comes to this issue of religious liberty, the oopsie model. Give us a taste of that, if you would.
Yeah. I thought it was well named. So what starts off is he says, so, you know, each letter stands for something. First O is for opportunity. He says you need a hot button event that, that gets things going. Think Chick-fil-A or Hobby Lobby or the Arizona law. Then you have outrage. And that's where people on one side of the culture war say, oh, bigotry. Usually they just say a lot of words like bigotry, 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 anti-gay, bigotry, bigotry, tolerance. And the media, The third O is opposition, which is that the media just completely adopts that terminology. So all of a sudden, a broad religious liberty bill becomes anti-gay. There's not even the word gay mentioned in the bill. It has, you know, when you look at the history of RFRA cases, Religious Freedom Restoration Act cases, I don't even know if any cases have had to do with gay anything. So it's a broad religious liberty bill that we've seen used all over the country, and it's now called anti-gay. I just want to point out something here on that, while we're on this O. Well, I'll go through. Then oversimplification, and that's where you don't get any nuance, you don't get any countervailing views or anything like that. Then overreach, which is that the media go way too far. Then there's a pendulum swing back, where people go, oh, maybe we went too far. Then dead silence, and then introspection. Now, I love this framework, although I really don't see the media ever getting to the introspection part, but I agree with the oops part of the oopsie model.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more with Molly Hemingway, senior editor at The Federalist, about media coverage of religious liberty. When we come back, she just mentioned it, the RFRA, RFRA statute. It is, in fact, a broad religious liberty bill. It's the one they're talking about in Arizona. It works beautifully everywhere else, and somehow in Arizona, it's anti-gay. We'll be right back.
The dangers inherent in particularly Lutheran Reformation Christians trying to be Baptists in their worship approach.
Craig Parton talking about his presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Just at the moment, a lot of people, Baptists and evangelicals included, are looking for more substance in their worship life. Many of them are looking to helpful liturgies and the hymns of the church to bring content to their services. Lutherans are throwing that stuff off the deck of the boat as fast as they can do it. So there'll be some comments, some discussion about why that's a dangerous avenue for Lutherans to take.
You can meet and hear Craig Parton making the case against Lutherans imitating evangelicals June 13th and 14th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, just look for the Making the Case logo at issuesetc.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Folks attending last year's Making the Case conference absolutely loved the barbecue from Randy's House of Barbecue in Troy and Highland, Illinois. The pork, chicken, ribs, and beef are prepared just like the old days in a pit cooked over hickory, apple, and wild cherry wood. Randy's House of Barbecue, Route 40 and Troy O'Fallon Road in Troy, and at 2649 Northtown Way in Highland. Randy's House of Barbecue, randysbbq.com.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. Molly Hemingway is our guest, senior editor at The Federalist. She has written an excellent column there titled Dumb, Uneducated, and Eager to Deceive Media Coverage of Religious Liberty in a Nutshell. Now, you mentioned the act before, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Give us a brief history of that thing.
Yeah, I think it's really important for people to understand where the Arizona legislation comes from. And everything kind of got rolling in 1993. There was a horrible Supreme Court ruling, in my opinion, authored by Justice Scalia, and I think it was Employment Division versus Smith. It said that Native Americans who were smoking peyote as a part of their religious service, as a part of their worship services, they could be fired by the state of Oregon, I think it was, and that was fine, no big deal. It was not a violation of religious liberty. And what you saw happen after that is that a lot of people thought, huh, if they can do that to Native Americans, like, what could they do to me? And so you had a broad coalition of people from, you know, far left to far right come together and work on legislation that would protect the religious freedom of people since there was this bad Supreme Court decision. The actual legislation was introduced by Chuck Schumer, not someone you normally think of as anti-gay. Both houses of Congress were, I think they were controlled by Democrats at that time, and the legislation passed almost unanimously. So again, bipartisan to the nth degree, and signed by Bill Clinton. Again, not someone we're normally thinking of as anti-gay. So that was 1993, and in the years since, you saw a lot of states go, this is great legislation, we want to enact this at the state level, and so they passed what would be called mini-RFRAs. And a lot about this legislation was bringing in, Arizona actually already has RFRA legislation. This bill would have tweaked a couple of things about it just to bring it in line with federal RFRA legislation, and that's pretty much the end of the story. Now, I'm not saying that everybody has to agree with the legislation or not. I just think it should have been presented in any semblance of honesty. And the idea that something that was kind of innocuous, just like if you do not support this religious liberty legislation, you're probably not going to support any religious liberty legislation. So the idea that this was somehow anti-gay and that there was never a discussion of what the two-page bill would have said, I mean, it was infuriating.
Okay, one of the things you point out here, and I think I've never heard, I haven't to this point of the conversation, heard anyone address this issue. I think it's unique to your Federalist piece. And I've heard a lot of misinterpretation that ignores this or is unaware of this. And that is that the law itself doesn't decide who wins the case if a case is brought. Why is that so important to understand in the particular cases of religious liberty that we're looking at in Arizona and elsewhere?
There are multiple issues here that speak to poor media coverage. One is, a lot of people said, this bill would legalize discrimination against gay people. Now, this is wrong on multiple levels, one of which is, believe it or not, it's actually already totally legal, according to Arizona law, to discriminate for any reason, not just religious reasons, against gay people, meaning sexual orientation is not a protected class. It's also legal to discriminate against straight people. So somehow the people of Arizona have managed to live with this freedom and not create straights-only or gay-only businesses, right? Because apparently we don't realize this, but people in America can live with a certain amount of freedom without doing something that makes no business sense. So there are like three towns in Arizona that have three cities that have passed sexual orientation as a protected class. But in terms of state law, it's actually fine. I should say, there's no prohibition on having a gay-only or straight-only business, okay? So saying that this would legalize discrimination against gays is wrong because it's already legal to do that. And secondly, the bill had nothing to do with that issue. It was a religious liberty bill that was not a discrimination or anti-discrimination bill. Secondly, even if a case were brought dealing with discrimination based on sexual orientation, this bill would help people make this bill would speak to that, but not in a way that would favor one side or the other, if that makes sense. So the idea that this bill was favoring people who want to discriminate against gays does not make any sense. It's just not true. It's not an accurate thing that was in this amendment to this. I should say it's not really a bill so much as an amendment. There were 12 attorneys who actually run the gamut on their views on same-sex marriage. They also weren't even all unified on whether this legislation needed to be passed or not. And they all wrote a letter basically saying, everything you've read about this is wrong. I mean, these are religious liberty professors and experts. And they made a specific specific point that nothing in this amendment would say who wins in RFRA cases. It just is a way of letting courts consider RFRA if there's legal action taken.
Now, you made a point. Actually, now I want you to make the case. You made a point early in our conversation that if RFRA, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, is anti-gay, then all legislation is anti-gay. What did you mean by that?
Well, I'm just pointing out that religious liberty cases can cover any number of people. And they can cover people who are, on all sides of an issue related to something gay. But to say that that broad religious liberty legislation that protects, like, a Christian and a Muslim and a Jew and a pagan, Native American, it protects them all the same way, to limit it to that tiny portion of people that might be affected under a RFRA that might be gay, it's not an accurate way to describe legislation. It would be like saying, let's say there was, in some other universe, there was a law that would make it legal to have an abortion. And some people would choose to have an abortion because their child, they could determine the child would be gay or something like that. It'd be like characterizing an entire piece of abortion legislation that hit everybody, that everybody could abort for any reason whatsoever, but some people might abort because their child would become gay, and calling it anti-gay. Now, I mean, it's, that is an issue that's okay to discuss in coverage of the topic, but to denigrate everything down to this slur is just juvenile, and it's naked activism, and it's very frustrating when you're counting on a media to provide any sort of insight into a really hot-button issue. Because even though religious liberty is assaulted on all sides, probably the most interesting thing right now is that as the country expands gay rights, apparently they are on a collision course with religious liberty, and that actually requires very difficult conversations about how do we tolerate everything. How do the people who oppose same-sex marriage, how do they live in a society that tolerates it? How do people who love gay marriage tolerate people who oppose it? I mean, these are very difficult questions that a civilized press would help us navigate instead of just throwing fuel on the fire and basically making religious liberty itself a casualty in their all-gay, all-the-time news obsession.
Take us through some of the particular cases of coverage in the news. You've got New York Times, you've got CNN, you've got the Associated Press, examples of all of those in your Federalist piece. Take us a few examples of what you thought was kind of the egregious treatment, the egregious job they're doing on just basically doing journalism here.
Well, I would say first off, one of the major problems you saw in the coverage was just the feeding frenzy. So if you turned on CNN, I don't think they could have said the word, the term anti-gay more if it was just on a constant repeat. I mean, every headline you saw, every, Chyron or whatnot, it was a serious problem. But it also affected the framing of all the stories. So instead of it being a discussion about a religious liberty bill, every headline claimed it was an anti-gay bill. And even though, again, the word doesn't even, there's nothing about sexual orientation in the entire bill. If anybody had read this, they might have picked that up. So the Associated Press, breaking, Arizona governor vetoes bill allowing religious reasons for refusing service to gays. Once again, that is not even true on multiple levels. It's just not true. And then even days later, when people were pointing out that was, not true, what was it? New York Times today had a piece that was all about how Republicans were just scared to death about this bill, which is, of course, true, because they didn't read it either. And the headline was something like, Arizona bill allowing refusal of service to gays. Again, it's already, like, sexual orientation isn't even a protected class. I mean, it would be just as accurate to say, Arizona bill allowing refusal of service to straights. But why is that not the headline? I mean, that would be just as untrue, I should say. And then my favorite was this Los Angeles Times story was, full of all this, it's anti-gay. And then late in the piece, it said something like, technically, the bill would have expanded the definition of the free exercise of religion, allowing a faithful person to adhere to his or her beliefs and practice. place, technically it was about the free exercise of religion, but what does it mean to allow a faithful person to adhere to beliefs in practice? As opposed to what? Like in your brain? Like that's not religious liberty, and that's never been religious liberty in this country, that you can only practice your beliefs in your brain and nowhere else. That's so different than what our country has always known religious liberty to be, even though we've fluctuated somewhat on, you know, on the particulars. But also I think there's another thing. If you're on Twitter, you get to see how these reporters think. And they are snarky, and they're really confident that they don't need to treat both sides of this story fairly, and it's just frustrating. So you had Kathy Grossman, who's used to be at USA Today, and now she's at Religion News Service, and she thought she had figured out. She really thought she'd figured it out. She said, if baking cakes equals participation, then evangelical bakers couldn't cater Catholic, Jewish, and religious events. Now, something tells me that people who have an opposition, or like, you know, let's say there's someone who wouldn't bake a cake for a ceremony they consider sinful, but they don't consider a Catholic, event sinful, even though they're not Catholic. Has she never met those people? Does she not understand how people think about sin and how it differs between tolerating different religions versus supporting something that they actually consider sinful or whatnot? I'm not saying that all Christians agree on what to do on baking cakes. Obviously, even in the Lutheran Church, there's probably quite a few ideas about that. All these reporters at Religion News Service, they just kept on calling it this. One of them called it Jan Brewer's Religious Freedom to Discriminate Against Gays Restoration Act. I mean, just outward hostility. It's helpful to see it. It's good to see that these reporters are hostile to religious liberty, but it's kind of appalling when even so-called religion reporters are expressing disdain for religious liberty. It's kind of appalling. Like, who can you count on to get the story right? Which, sadly, apparently is nobody, but...
Molly Hemingway is our guest. She'll be with us for a few minutes on the other side of the break. She's senior editor at The Federalist. And she's talking with us about media coverage of religious liberty. It's Friday afternoon, February the 28th. Molly has written an article for The Federalist, a column, titled Dumb, Uneducated, and Eager to Deceive, Media Coverage of Religious Liberty in a Nutshell. We'll be right back. Here's Eric listening in Chicago. Hi, Eric. What's up?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say I really encourage people to give to Issues, et cetera, as it's the flagship of confessional liturgical Lutheranism in the world, I'd say, on the media.
Issues, et cetera, is listener-supported, and you can support the flagship of confessional liturgical Lutheranism in the media by making a secure online donation at our homepage, issuesetc.org. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your support.
In Higher Things, we believe that if you put good Christ crucified for you Lutheranism into a youth, you'll get a good Christ crucified for you Lutheran youth. Join us this July at the Higher Things Crucified Youth Conferences in Florida, Wisconsin, Utah. Check us out at www.higherthings.org. Higherthings.org. Dare your youth to be Lutherans this summer.
There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe the law condemns everyone and should be preached to the fullest. People who believe the gospel is for everyone and should be preached to its sweetest. Traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice deliver every Sunday this law and gospel, that Christ was crucified for us sinners. To all who received him, who believed in his name, the Gospel of John says, he gave the right to become children of God. To see how Steadfast Lutherans preserves this good news for everyone, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues, etc.
Christ at the Center, The Justification of the Ungodly, A Contemporary View of Faith and Reason, The Holy Spirit in Christ. These are just some of the almost 30 essays included in Propter Christum, Christ at the Center. It's a new book of essays in honor of Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Daniel Preuss. Find out more and purchase Propter Christum at shop.logia.org. Propter Christum, Christ at the Center, shop.logia.org.
He's the most Lutheran man in the world.
I'm not always in Pensacola, Florida, but when I am, I attend Emmanuel Lutheran Church.
Congregation of Emmanuel Lutheran Church of Pensacola, Florida invites you to join us for divine services on Sundays at 8 or 10:30. Sunday school and Bible class at 9:15. Whether you're in Pensacola to enjoy the white sandy beaches of the Emerald Coast or for military training, we invite you to join us. Jesus is here. Word, water, bread and wine for you.
Emmanuel, God with us.
Stay Lutheran, my friends.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Molly Hemingway is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of religious liberty. She's senior editor at The Federalist and author of a recent column for The Federalist titled Dumb, Uneducated, and Eager to Deceive, Media Coverage of Religious Liberty in a Nutshell. Here's the crucial question for me, Molly. I only got a couple more for you. Does the popular media appear to have decided already that religious liberty and gay rights cannot coexist?
Well, I think, sadly, that that might be the case. You know, it is, there is a collision course, and I think people who are honest on both sides have been pointing out that there is a, that there are really rough areas between these two issues of rights. What blew me away about this coverage was what they were basically saying with, again, the sort of, you know, standard religious liberty legislation is that you can't have both gay rights and religious liberty. And I think there was at least a time when Americans would have been appalled by that. And if they were forced to choose, they would say, well, wait, maybe we've been way too tolerant. Like, we thought we were just extending tolerance and that we'd get some tolerance back. If it turns out that we have to give up God in order to extend further rights here, we might not be so okay with it. But what's unfortunate is that the media has become so tyrannical about this topic. And they're proudly so. You have people from the New York Times, NPR, Washington Post, big publications saying, we proudly do not cover this issue fairly because anyone who opposes same-sex marriage is the equivalent of the worst racist who ever hit American shores. Okay? So if that's the media climate where you can't even debate, you know, something like this in a civil manner, well, we're kind of doomed on this topic, which is, it's very frustrating that the media put this out as you can basically not have religious liberty or you are an anti-gay bigot.
You mentioned earlier John Swearen's little framework there, the oopsie framework, the I being introspection. Do you think that the current media in this climate is capable of that last thing, of actually stopping, slowing down, and engaging in a little introspection on the real subject of religious liberty? About a minute here.
I don't mean to be so despairing, and you know, certainly there's a lot in the world to be thankful for, and yet I just have to say I don't think the media are even capable of introspection. I think that requires a certain level of education that they don't have. Part of that is not their fault. I mean, people aren't even taught about natural rights in this country in high school or college anymore. It's like you might learn about it through your own study, but I don't even think reporters, people who are reporters now, they might never have even learned about it. They might not even have the framework to understand anything about philosophy or religion. And so they're very confident that they're right. They don't have a lot of education or smarts to back it up. So you need those things to be introspective, and you need humility to be introspective. I don't see any introspection. I see cheerleading and arrogance and brio and just not a lot of smarts, and I am worried about that.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is a senior editor at The Federalist. She's author of a recent column for The Federalist, Dumb, Uneducated, and Eager to Deceive, Media Coverage of Religious Liberty in a Nutshell. You can read this column at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Molly, thank you very much.
Thank you.